You're listening to the Lone Star Gridiron Sports Network.
The playoffs begin next week, but for a lot of teams, it begins in Week 11. Hello, everybody. Terry Bennett here on the Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex Huddle right here on the LSG Sports Network. As it's Week 11, it's the last week. It's do or die for a lot of teams. Not only fourth-place scenarios, but there's district championships that still have to be decided. But as Diggs will tell you, and that's Matt Diggs will be joining us as he does each and every week, it doesn't seem to be as crazy as it has been in the past. This seems to be a little bit more of a cut and dry. There are some districts that have some crazy – or not crazy, but there's some districts that have some scenarios, but most of those districts are really, really set, and most of those scenarios are pretty – I can see that's going to happen. There's not a lot of, where a chance where a 1-8 team, they get a win and they're going to skyrocket all the way up the standings into the playoff spot. So still, though, what we have to talk about is going to be awesome. Want to thank our sponsors. First off, we're going to talk with our title sponsor, and that's Top Shelf Salsa. Man, we got something really cool that we're going to be doing for Top Shelf Sauce. We've actually already started it. Grant and I, Grant, who does the Sideline to Sideline show with me, we have a bunch of the jars. We got a little batch that Top Shelf Salsa sent us, that some free samples, and we're videotaping us trying them, but we're also we took them out with us on the road a couple times, or we've done it once and we're going to do it a couple more times, but we're videotaping people trying just to get their reaction and stuff. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that together, and we're going to put that package together, and we'll have it up on the website probably in the first couple rounds of the playoffs, or we might save it for the state championship, because we're going to do something really cool here on the Lone Star Gridiron. We did it last year, but we're doing it bigger this year. We'll announce that, though, as it comes closer. But anyway, thanks to our title sponsor, Top Shelf Salsa. You can visit them online, topshelfsalsa.com, for just some beautifully made. I am serious, folks. I'm not just saying this because I'm selling it. I'm saying it because it's true. I really do like their sauce. I like all their brands. You've got Heat Wave Salsa, Pineapple Habanero, Rojo Hot, Rojo Medium, Rojo Mild, Salsa Verde Medium, Salsa Verde Hot, Salsa Verde Mild, Smoking Hot Salsa, which has got the name of Slap Your Face Hot, and then Sweet Habanero Peach. So you really have a little bit of all times. If you want the heat, you go with the Slap Your Face. If you want the mild with a little bit of sweetness, that's the Sweet Habanero Peach. You want what I call the taco hot sauce, because I have different types of sauces. I'm a big salsa connoisseur, and most people in Texas and in Dallas, Fort Worth, and really all of Texas are. I like different styles for what I'm eating. Like if I'm just doing chips and hot sauce, I want something extremely hot. That I want something that you're kind of challenging yourself to eat. But like if I want to do tacos, or if I want to do enchiladas or something like that, I don't want something so hot that it eats up the rest of the flavors of what I'm eating. And that's what Top Shelf Sauce is so amazing about, is that it has all those. It has your super, super hot. It has your sweet with flavor. It's your chunky. You have the salsa verde. You have a little bit of everything. And so, again, check them out online at topshelfsalsa.com. You can also purchase online. And the great thing is you don't have to purchase like a case or multiples. You can just get one bottle if you'd like. That's how great it is. And it's great packaging. It's affordable. That's the other thing. Salsa today has exploded. It's like where bacon and barbecue is. It's overpriced because we pay for it. This is affordable per bottle. It's very affordable, and it's tasty. So check them out again. That's topshelfsalsa.com. Also, I want to thank MH Oil and Gas, providing you custom power and communication cables for rugged and demanding environments. They service the oil and gas, industrial, and heavy-duty industries. You can give them a call at 972-672-7070. They will help you with all of your custom cable requirements. Also, Heroes Heating and Air, servicing the North Texas area for your heating and air conditioning needs. They service your existing units, or they can design a brand new build system for you. So whether it's just for service or it is a new install, pick up the phone and give them a call, 940-597-9638. Also, check out at dfwexecutiverealty.com. That's Eddie Washington. You can also email him, edwash1@msn.com, for all your realty needs over in the DFW area. The website is perfect. You can separate all your searches by prices, by whether it's a house, whether it's a condo. You can even go into neighborhoods. You can even separate it by price, the neighborhood's prices. So if you're interested in a certain part of Fort Worth, but you want to know what the price range is, you just type that in, and it'll pull up all of the listings there. So, again, thank all of our sponsors. It's been a great DFW show. We had a lot of fun. Matt's been a blast each and every week, and this is going to be a great one. I've already recorded this one. This is going to be another great one. I will say we kind of go off on a tangent at the end, but, hey, it wouldn't be Matt and I if we didn't do that anyway. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Matt's going to join me right here on the Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex Huddle on the LSG Sports Network.
Imagine a game where you can pit the greatest Texas high school football teams of all time against each other. Before now, if you wanted to see the Permian Panthers of Friday Night Lights fame play Johnny Manziel's 2010 Kerrville squad, you were stuck with only your imagination. Not anymore. This new game allows you to play those dream matchups. 1983 Dangerfield, only allowed 8 points all season. 2015, Katy, 10 shutouts en route to their fourth straight championship appearance. 2008, Allen, their first of 5 championships in the state's largest classification. And so many more. Friday Night Legends is that game. What are you waiting for? Get in the game. Friday Night Legends.
To get your copy of Friday Night Legends, the game, head over to FridayNightLegends.com.
Terry Bennett back here on the Top Shelf Salsa DFW regional show, the Metroplex. Man, it has been a long week. It's always like this when it comes to the last week of the regular season, into the playoffs, but hey, this is the part I love. The other part I love is my weekly chats with Mr. Diggs. As Matt Diggs of theoldcoach.com fame joins us, you can also see him on Twitter, at Professor Diggs. You can also hear him on our other DFW-esque show, our Frisco ISD football show. He also does a video podcast every Friday night, the fifth quarter. Matt, how are you doing today, bud?
Well, I'm excited. I'm doing well, and I know you're doing well because I've asked you 3 times now. But just for podcast purposes, you still doing well? Nothing on the editing side of things that brought you down?
Nothing in the last 16 minutes and 45 seconds that we've been talking has anything changed. I always do feel that the second on air, how you doing, always does. Always when I listen and edit, I always go, oh, we sound so fake there.
We do, but that was a little more authentic. Hey, and there is some authenticity to be had this week, for sure.
Oh, man, it is. I mean, it's the week that it used to be. It's funny because online and on, you know, online newspapers and all that have made this so much more enjoyable. Because I can remember when we first started out doing this, and even as a fan, but when we really started doing this, you and I, because we kind of began around the same time in the early 2000s, all these scenarios and stuff, you literally just had to know. You had to write them down, and you had to know, because you wouldn't have too many online verifiable ways to know what the scenarios were unless you were following them all through the whole season.
Right. And honestly, relative to other seasons, this has been a very melodramatic week 11. I mean, there are a couple of things going on, but we have more decided already than I remember in the last couple of years, especially in 6A. I mean, it's almost just get ready for next week, you know, just play out the string. So much stuff in DFW 6A, it's pretty much decided.
Well, it's funny you say that, because not only that, the two things about DFW football this year is, A, we never had the weather week, or the weather weeks, as it seemed like it had been for a few years. We never had that 1 or 2 weekends where games were just completely, you know, wholesale canceled or moved because of lightning and stuff. And then, B, like you said, there's been some upsets, and there's always some surprise teams and some disappointing teams. But it really does feel like a lot of the teams have kind of reached exactly the projections where most people thought they would be.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me your district champions were going to be Longview, Sachse, Allen, Duncanville, Cedar Hill or DeSoto, Marcus, South Lake Carroll, nobody's going to be like, oh, well, you know. But, I mean, it pretty much happened as we thought it would happen. I think maybe Martin being a little bit higher is a little bit of a surprise. I think a lot of people were high on Arlington, but we've kind of talked about why Arlington has, with their quarterback situation, hasn't been quite up there. But, again, Martin has been such a good team over the last decade for so long. Even that's not a surprise. It's not like we're talking about North Crowley or Sam Houston in that district title spot. My Thursday game of the week will actually be seeing Arlington Martin and Arlington Bowie. My first look at Arlington ISD.
Wait.
What?
That's the Thursday night game you're going to?
Yes.
Why?
Because I'm a little bit of an introvert. I know you don't know this, and I
do.
Like being
I do
around
personally.
I don't like being around a lot of people, and I know that our website, for instance, has four people at Cedar Hill DeSoto.
Okay.
And I know there's going to be a lot of people at Cedar Hill DeSoto, and I haven't seen District 4-6A, so I want to see how they're going to fare. Because I've seen a lot of teams in 3-6A, and I've seen several teams in 7-6A and 8-6A. So now I want to see how the Arlington schools, because we've talked about it. We've talked about how ugly Martin has been winning their games. I want to see it in person. I want to see how good their defense is. I want to see if their offensive line is getting pushed. I want to see some of those intangibles. So next week, when we're talking playoffs and who's got to have a good route, that I can give you some confidence about Arlington ISD.
No, I was just giving you a hard time. I'd actually seen that when you pointed out which game you were going to, and I agree with you. That's the funny thing about it. That's the thing I always tell people. A lot of us that cover this and do podcasts and stuff, the whole reason we do podcasts and stuff is so we can kind of hide away in our own little – I have my own little office here at the house, and you do the same, and we just – everybody leave us alone so we can talk football.
That's right. And we all actually have to see you. That's even better. Although that's going to change soon. But
yes, we'll be talking about that. We'll actually announce that. I'm going to do that in the closing part of the show. I'm going to tease week two of the playoffs. All right. Speaking of the playoffs, before we get to week two, before we get to week one, we've got week 11 of the regular season. Where do you want to start? I'm letting you drive the DFW train today because I have been accused, and rightfully so, of sitting on certain topics. I allow me and you to marinate on one or two games, and it kind of eats the time. So we're going to try it this way. You pick the games, and we'll go from there. Where do you want to start?
Well, you can do a little bit of back production, and you can give us the scenarios on 3-6A and kind of talked about it. But let's talk about 3-6A because we talked about how relatively nondescript 3-6A is, or 6A in general is.
Yeah.
3-6A is one of the exceptions. This is a district that is completely fun, and even though mathematically LD Bell, doesn't have a real good shot of making the playoffs, I think they might be fully eliminated. There is a hypothetical where there's a four-way tie for fourth place at 2-4 in this district if Weatherford beats LD Bell and St. Angelo Central beats Haltom. I mean, this is a district last week that had another shocker with Richland beating Weatherford, a game that went to about 11:30 at night, four-hour game, 65-62. So this has been the most fun district for me to watch. And now we've got basically a de facto district championship game with Euless Trinity against Richland. And I don't think anybody would have predicted that.
Well, I mean, this district for the most part of the year was just going to simply be Trinity and then the Elves or the Dwarves, however you want to call it. You look at Richland, I mean, they came into district, 1-4. They've ripped off four wins, including, like you said, the shocker against Weatherford. But this is also after losing to LD Bell, I think week two of the playoff or the district schedule. Then you have Trinity getting knocked off by Haltom, a team that, okay, Haltom, yeah, last year district champs, that was such a big moment when they beat Trinity last year. But this year they've struggled. They're 4-5. This has been one of those districts that every time you think you have your finger on the pulse, something changes.
Absolutely, which makes, you'd have to think, even though Trinity is going to be a favorite over Richland, are they really, because of the way this district has played out? Now, I'm still going to take Trinity mathematically in that 14-17 point range over Richland. But again, Richland has overachieved each week, and it's not the talent per se, because Richland doesn't have this, breakout running back or breakout quarterback like Weatherford has, but they are playing better team football, and that's fun to see. And when you have a team believing, you have the coaches over there, Coach Gates is just doing a fantastic job at Richland. It makes them a scary team, even though this is not a team that you're going to put on paper and you're going to program them in the Madden and they're just going to be world beaters. But they're fun in the sense that they don't give up. They're gritty. They have a good offense. They have an opportunistic defense. And I don't think their playoff road maps out very well. I don't think their district championship maps out very well. But every week you could have told me, well, I don't think they're going to map out well in that rivalry game against Haltom. They beat them. Well, now they're playing Weatherford. They have no chance against Weatherford. they beat them. And now they got Trinity, and they have that kind of a peak in their brain. They can say, okay, well, Haltom beat Trinity. We beat Haltom. Why can't we beat Trinity? And honestly, why can't they beat Trinity? Trinity hasn't shown themselves to be world beaters this year. So that's going to be a very interesting game, even though the math and the lining up the stats kind of indicates that Trinity is a big favorite.
Well, and what makes 3-6A so enjoyable is not only that top one, because I'm like you, at the end of the day, this is one of those games where it won't shock me if we wake up and Trinity wins 42-21, but it also wouldn't shock me if we wake up and Richland wins 20-19. But where this district, to me, gets really fun, because those two teams are safe. Well, to me, where the district gets really fun is when you're talking about those last two spots. And you've got San Angelo Central, you've got Abilene, you've got Haltom, you've got Weatherford. You've got all them sitting there, you know, and then they all play each other. San Angelo Central plays Haltom. So how do you see all of the rest of this falling out?
Well, you know, I did a little bit of analysis for this show. You know, you get to kind of deeper dive into some of these topics.
Is this like is this like Diggs' version of the Padilla poll? It's the Diggs.
That's
you
can, right.
If you just listen to the show, you'll get just Diggs giving us very generic information. If you pay $5.99, you'll get Diggs Insider.
That's right. Lone Star Gridiron can give you that deep. You have to get that special behind the paywall podcast.
Yeah, there. The deep discounts.
And you have to have a password, too.
Yes.
You'll have to wait for the password to the end of the show.
And you, we're not going to tell you the password. You have to just guess which – you have to listen to the
That's
show
right.
and guess which password it is.
And if you guess Plano East, it's wrong, by the way. You know? Not that. But to me, San Angelo Central on the road has been a different team than San
yes.
Angelo Central at home. And that's been a very pronounced – throughout their whole season, San Angelo Central is about 1 to 2 touchdowns better at home than they are on the road. This game is at Haltom. I think with Haltom's desperation needs, I think Haltom wins this game, and I actually think that they win this game by the requisite 11 that they're going to need potentially if they got in a three-way tie. I think Haltom's going to win by 14 over San Angelo Central. I like the fact that this game is at home for Haltom. So I like Haltom to win that game. I like Weatherford to beat LD Bell, and I think because of the size of the victory that Haltom I'm projecting over St. Angelo Central at home, that's a big drive for St. Angelo Central to have to make to end the season. I think St. Angelo Central is going to end up being the odd team out in this district.
I think the only prediction I can truly make is everybody in this district is praying in realignment that this district is not the same next year. This has been like the bastard divorce district, because you've got San Angelo and you got Abilene. They're like the step parents to the regular parents of Euless Trinity and all that. And it's a weird district. Every game's a curiosity. There's no real, and I'm talking about when you split them up. I mean, you have the inside rivalries like Trinity and Haltom and all that, but the San Angelo and Richland and Abilene just never felt right coming. This district just never felt right.
It hasn't, and I know LD Bell is cheering big time because LD Bell has that complex against Trinity that they haven't beat Trinity since the early 90s or maybe late 80s. I can't. Somebody told me one time it's a ridiculous number, maybe 94, something to that end. But if Richland beats Trinity and LD Bell beat Richland earlier, then LD Bell will have a share of the Morrill District Championship, and that will be – they'll put a banner up in – in Hurst.
Wow, you're already trying to throw arrows here. It's the playoffs, man. We're supposed to be talking nice here. All right, what?
It's a happy day in LD Bell.
Oh, you have to throw out there an Aggie and put up a senseless banner, which I'm not saying you're wrong, but anyway.
I love banners. District 4-6A, I pointed out that I will be going to the Arlington-Martin Bowie game. I think Arlington-Lamar is kind of surprising me as a team that is a little bit better than we might have projected earlier in the year. When are we going to see North Crowley finally rise up? When are we going to see Sam Houston finally rise up? Just looking at the standings, you've got four teams at 7-2 and 8-1 and four teams at 2-7. I mean, this is the epitome of the haves and have-nots, but you could have projected this, and every year it is like this. So I ask you, Terry, when will North Crowley finally get up there and challenge one of those four teams?
Let's see. The last time I remember North Crowley being anything was the year that they – was that them or Crowley? I think it was North Crowley that kind of backed into the state championship because Texas High. Ryan Mallett had been, when they were going for their a really legitimate chance to be back-to-back state champs. And old Ryan Mallett, that was the first of his many times where you see he get in trouble for substance abuse issues, and he got suspended. And then I think it was North Crowley that upset Texas High and ended up in the state championship game and got the doors beat off of him. That would have been, what, 2002? 2003, but even then, I think that team, if I remember correctly, was like 5-5 going into the playoffs, and they just hit a nice little stretch there.
Right.
Arlington Sam Houston, the last time I remember them, dude, it was when we played on Marshall. We played Arlington Sam Houston in the state semifinals of our state championship run, and they had a stud running back, and then they had Mike Adams, who went to University of Texas and ended up playing in the pros for a couple years. That's the last time and the only time, honestly, those two teams have ever been anything. So I guess the response would be maybe never. I'm not one of those that believes that every school is destined to have their football day in the sun. Some schools, you're always going to be what you are.
Would you like a fun fact, Terry?
Yes.
I know you do. When North Crowley won state that year in 2002-2003, I made their end-of-year DVD about three times by just completely crapping all over them and saying they had no chance.
Oh, were you one of those that got the little – they do the little sound bites of you saying it into
yeah.
the – I got that.
Right.
I got that for Canton the year that G.J. Kinney and them went and played Gilmer and won in that thriller. Back then, I covered Canton at the time, but I had wrote on our old Lone Star Teams website that, you know, that – it's been a fun ride, but Canton doesn't have a chance once the playoff come. And so when they made the DVD, there was my in words, you know, they had put it over some highlights, and I was just like, oh gosh, really, guys? Seriously?
Well, that's fun. And I alluded to this, and to me, one of the bigger upsets last week was Mansfield Summit versus Waxahachie. And I want to make fun of myself because I am probably the worst at doing this, and spending 90 seconds talking about this and shaming myself on air might help me to be better about this. But one of my weaknesses in projecting playoffs is I will assume things, you know, like, oh, no, such and such team has no chance to lose to an Irving.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. And I just assumed that Mansfield Summit would beat a winless Waxahachie team probably by 4 or 5 touchdowns. And then, I'm doing Twitter projections last week on District 7-6A, talking about how Cedar Hill and DeSoto, how that game could end up flipping depending on point differential, just assuming Mansfield Summit had won that game. I saw a score earlier that they were up by like 3 points. I'm like, they're going to win this game. And it ended up that Mansfield Summit lost to Waxahachie last week in a 10-6, just a game that you just have no clue how that happened. It wasn't even really a big turnover battle. It was just some defense being played, and Mansfield Summit just completely fell off the face of the earth.
And well, I know why it happened. I mean, the week before they had the massive upset of DeSoto. I mean, that's exactly what happened. You beat DeSoto by 1 point. You were the darlings of DFW for a week, and then you're playing lowly Waxahachie. But the problem is you're going into Indian territory, and I think that was that perfect trap game for them. Maybe it was a sign of something we haven't seen. You know, because you can also go by other until the DeSoto game. Their only other test was Cedar Hill, and they got their doors blown off.
And I think to that end, I'm going to go ahead and I think an interesting game this week is Summit against Lake Ridge. You have Lake Ridge, a team that can't make the playoffs, but a team playing for pride, a team that might have underachieved this year, playing against Summit, a team that's down after losing to Waxahachie, trying to get up to the playoffs. I think we're going to see Lake Ridge beat Summit this week. This week 11 always has crazy things. I mean, you can pick 10 crazy upsets, and you might hit on 6 of them just because week 11, the calculus has changed. Sometimes they're focused on the playoffs. Sometimes you've got teams just wanting to win that last game. Senior year, go out with the pride of having won the game, so they get up in a way that you haven't seen all year. I think for Lake Ridge, Summit's got that playoff spot wrapped up. They've got the game wrapped up next week who they're going to be playing. I think Lake Ridge upset Summit. So put a little star next to that, and we'll see if I'm right on that one.
I think the interesting – I mean, we all know Cedar Hill, and we all know DeSoto. Even though Cedar Hill's had a bounce-back year, but we all know DeSoto, and we think we might know Summit. I think the interesting team out of 7-6A South Grand Prairie, because they're just a team you never really want to play in the playoffs. They just always muck it up. They're a team that's not quite talented enough or not quite whatever it is enough to be a 10-win type team, but they're talented enough to be able to beat any 10-win team in the DFW area almost at any time. You just never know what you're going to get with the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, South Grand Prairie, they play, you know, we heard about them playing South Lake good for a half, you know, and that's kind of been this year. They're playing people good for a half.
Yeah.
And
played Lancaster good for a half.
Game, yeah. If they can put together that full game, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to beat Duncanville in the first round of the playoffs by no means, but Duncanville's not looking at that game like, you know, we're going to blow them out. They're looking at that game, we got to play 48 minutes. We got to use this game to get our heads right. And I've kind of an interesting question for you, and I'm going to use this to kind of pivot into Duncanville talk. If you were going to build a 6A playoff team, you know, you get all of the things that, you know, we're going to pretend like this is Madden. What would your 6A playoff team look like? Like, are you going to, obviously you want the best of both worlds, but if you're just moderately talented, what kind of offense are you going to run? What kind of defense are you going to run? And what, you know, what would your specific style look like to be ready for playoffs in this generation?
In this generation, I mean, and I'm getting to, we're playing the game of, I get to pick whatever style I have, whatever style I pick, automatically the talent is built for it. I'm not, you know, looking at, you know, yes, you know what I'm saying. I would go in today's football, if offensively I'm running a heavy spread option based offense, where I'm basically running a slot T slash wing T, but out of the shotgun, which, by the way, the wing T originally was out of the shotgun. I believe in today's football, everybody's defenses are running the 4-2-5s a ton, and they've got smallish linebackers, and if you get a good power set offense, you can then drive them. On the other side, defensively, I would go with the 4-2-5. You want athleticism in the secondary. You want linebackers that can be able to run. And then if you want to go all – now, if we want to go all the intangibles, one of the intangibles I don't want to have is, honestly, what seems to be whatever right now is the snake bit that Reginald Samples on them always get, and where you just – you think you're going to win the big game, and then you end up losing on a Hail Mary type of thing, or a fox or running across the field, or things like that.
Yeah, and I wanted to use that to pivot, because I'm worried about Duncanville this year, because Duncanville's offense isn't really, you know, to me, I'd want a very explosive offense as well. And you kind of mentioned how yours would end up being. Duncanville's offense, they have explosive players, but it is not built to be an explosive offense. And this is a team where if they get down for whatever reason, you know, they get a muffed punt to start the game. So, you know, a team like Allen starts out off the 10-yard line and they score 7-0, then they get a stop, and all of a sudden it's 14-0. Duncanville is not really built to, you know, throw up 42 points like a team like South Lake Carroll and Allen has kind of been. So I'm a little worried about Duncanville. I think they've got one of the best defenses in the state, and that can do very well in those things. But if they get behind, if some of those snake bites start to occur, I worry about them being able to pull out of it. So,
well, that's you know, kind of like, I'm sorry, but that's kind of my point, because, I mean, let's be honest. The knock you have against a coach like Reginald Samples with his time at Skyline and Duncanville is, when it comes down to it, he will beat you as long as the talent overrides anything that you have. But once the ins and outs and the X's and O's and that get to be where a South Lake Carroll, where, yeah, they might not be as talented, but they're talented enough, and then they also have the X's and O advantage, that's when they tend to struggle. And I don't really count the state championship game, because that was a freaking Hail Mary. That's just completely different. But the South Lake Carroll loss when he was at Skyline, the Fox running across the field. Skyline was dominating South Lake Carroll for 3/4 of that game. But when it came down to the X's and O's, and when it came down, like you say, you're playing from behind and you need to mix things up, that's where it seems like they always get snake bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I know Duncanville's only given up 33 points this year, and that is one of the most ridiculous stats in the state this year, is to go through district and go through a non-district where they're playing national powerhouses. But again, even that St. John game, you know, it took to the second half, and they didn't really pull away until then, and, you know, who knows how good that team from Washington, D.C. is in the big picture and how they would rank in the state. And the Lancaster game, you know, it was not a pretty offensive, you know, battle. And Lancaster's defense showed that they could shut them down. And we see Highland Park put up 42 points on that Lancaster defense. So, and that's with 3 or 4 turnovers that they had in that game as well. So I'm a little worried about Duncanville. A team like South Grand Prairie, you know, they took it to, you know, every year there's something crazy. And last year it was Cedar Hill getting upset by Pierce, you know, and we just look at that, like, how did that happen? South Grand Prairie against Duncanville is the ultimate trap game, and South Grand Prairie is not going to be scared of Duncanville. And when it comes down to it, Duncanville has a 1-2 touchdown advantage over just about everybody when they play them just by walking out on the field. And well, South Grand Prairie is going to be looking at them like, we're not that impressed. We've seen this all year.
Well, what was it? 2014, 2015, South Grand Prairie did that to Euless Trinity in the first round of the playoffs. Upset them 24-21, if I remember. The only reason I remember that score thing is because I remember Grant having to read the score because we were in another game, reading the score to me like three times because I'm like, what? No, who really won? He's like, dude, I'm getting this on Twitter. It's South Grand Prairie. And that was a team that had struggled into the district and I think had to back into the playoffs. They had won a couple games early in district and then got destroyed by the Sotos and the Mansfield and the Cedar Hills and had to back into the playoffs. So, and again, it might be fair or unfair, but that's just the perception that you have against a team like Duncanville. And it's the perception is sometimes is the reality, but perception usually honestly spawns from some reality. And that's the reality is that you sometimes don't trust a team that's coached by, for me in DFW, two people. It's Samples and Mathis at DeSoto. You just, when it just seems like when things are going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong to them.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you have to break the streaks, you know, and you have to trust teams. And if Duncanville wins state, you know, and they win every game by 45, we would not be surprised because they have that kind of historically dominant, almost danger field like defense. You know, just only giving up 33 points in 10 games is just ridiculous, you know, to do that kind of a thing. So if they roll through, it's going to be with the strength of their defense. But if they start getting into some of those games against Southlake and Allen or Rockwall, and all of a sudden those scores start to get up a little bit, I worry about Duncanville being able to diversify their offense and be able to get in a shootout if needed. Because it seems like when we start getting into week three and week four of the playoffs, you see a lot of 40-30 games.
Yeah, no matter who the defenses are.
Right. And can Duncanville play that kind of football? We just don't know at this point. We know how great their defense is. We know how great their skill players are. But can they grind for 48 minutes? And that's something Duncanville hasn't had to play for 48 minutes this year. You know, damn, they've been very liberal in rotating. I mean, you look at the game against Molina this week. How much do you think their starters are going to play in this game?
Oh, probably. I'd play them a quarter and then get them out at the most.
Yeah. You know, and that's just something to where it's going to help with depth. And we see that with Allen year in and year out, how important that depth is to kind of buffer against injuries. But will it get ready when it gets tight? And that's a knock on Duncanville. And I think if we want to call them the number one team in the state and they're kind of our favorites in DFW area and in our regions, you got to be able to give them the criticism as well. And I'm worried about Duncanville. And that's a good worry because, you know, that gives – it's a proving ground for Samples. Can he coach his way to this kind of very methodical route that they're playing? Can he get them to that next level and prove the naysayers like you? Will you be on their audio tape talking about how Samples can't do it? And how
no,
Mathis
I said that's
can't
the perception of – that's the perception.
The first
The funny thing is, I will say this, though. Don't you kind of feel, and we've seen this many times before with other coaches, you kind of feel that if Samples will just get that one this year, and I kind of feel like it has to be this year, and I mean, it doesn't, but this kind of feels like we're at an apex of where his career went, because, I mean, you kind of keep wanting to think, oh, Samples, you know, he hasn't been there long, but you start adding up the years, and yeah, he's been coaching for a long time. I feel like if they finally push it this year and get it, you could see a dynasty run from him. But then I kind of feel like if they do fall short again, then you kind of just left with, okay, where do we go from here?
Absolutely. Another crazy district, yes. Going to Region 2, 9-6A. We won't talk about what happened with Plano East last week. That's
I have to ask you, though, because if you don't, people don't know, Plano East lost in an absolute tragic way. And I was in part feeling bad for you, in part enjoying the Twitter meltdown as the lead was evaporating and as Plano West was coming back. You ranked it as one of your toughest losses, and your ranking list was very, very good. I enjoyed that. But does it still rank up there a week later, or is now that the pain's wore off a little bit, is it still there, or are you starting to go, okay, that loss wasn't that bad, it just was in the moment?
I mean, it was that bad, but it could be a race this week. In fact, I'm actually going to take Plano East to upset Jesuit because Jesuit lost EJ Smith last
week.
And that takes Jesuit from being an incredibly good football team to being exceptionally well coached and average. And when you don't have that offensive playmaker, you start to see teams kind of, okay, well, we just scheme for the run, just have single coverage against the receivers who haven't shown you that they can break away and stop the run, keep the pass at bay, and you can be all of a sudden Jesuit becomes a much more beatable team. Just that one player, because that dynamic, you can rotate him in and out, you can put him out to the wing, you can do so much stuff with EJ Smith that makes the defenses have to play more honest, and that opens up the rest of the game. Now that Jesuit doesn't have that, we saw McKinney beat him, and I thought Plano East was a better team than McKinney. Should have beat them if not for a phantom pass interference, two phantom pass interference calls that went McKinney's way, and most people even we wrote about the newspaper, so that's just not even my opinion.
Yeah.
I think Plano East beats Jesuit, and that's that kind of validates their season, and when the last one becomes the rallying cry of that, because Jesuit's going to make the playoffs. They are there. They've got their spot. I think they're just like, okay, let's get through this and try to figure out something for the playoffs. And they have winnable games in the playoffs as well. So Jesuit has a chance to even go too deep before they play a team like Longview in the second round, and that's pretty much it. So I think Plano East has a chance to avenge that loss against Plano West, as embarrassing as it was to give up 18 points and 4 minutes the final game. So that can help make things feel better. But in and of itself, that's just one of the worst losses. And not even the fact that, you know, you give up 18 points in 4 minutes, you give up 14 points in 1 minute. But it's the fact that you did it to your Crossroads Town rivals that ended their big streak. So it put it all together. Yes, it's still bad, but time heals everything.
Actually, a question that I've always wanted to ask you, and I probably did when we first met, and we both don't remember. In your little trinity of Plano schools, is there a hierarchy of what's the rival to you as an East fan? Is it Plano first, or is it West first, or are they even?
No, it's actually Plano first, Allen second.
Oh, okay.
Plano West third. Okay. So Allen even gets in there higher.
But is Allen now? Is Allen your rival? Like, I have friends of mine that live in Cleveland, and they're big Cleveland Browns fans, and they absolutely hate New England, and they think of them as a rival. And I'm always like, well, why are you a rival? You and Allen are in the same district, but you're not in the same division. Y'all don't, y'all have had no, amazing playoff game battles or games of history, and it's simply they hate them because they win the AFC all the time. Are you counting Allen just simply because they win all the time?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, because Allen doesn't really consider anybody in the district rivals anymore. I mean, they've won 10 straight years over every team, so the district rivals really don't have that. They're probably looking at Trinity and Duncanville and South Lake as the big rivals. But we always joke because, Allen has such a big fan base. They have, like, backup flag runners, and they have 30 flag runners and all that. So it's like the B team in the rivalry. They have to look at the Plano City Championship. That's their kind of job. Is the A team rivalry people, they're looking at South Lake and Duncanville.
You bring up a good point, though, dude.
The JV folks are looking at.
I'm sorry, but you bring up a really good point that I don't think anybody's ever really talked about. Allen got so big so fast, and they literally leapfrog classifications that they really don't have what you would call, like, rivals, like, they're blood rivals. I mean, you can pick at South Lake Carroll, but those are all playoff rivalries, and they've been great games, but you don't have those blood sport games that you know what I'm talking about, the Plano East games, where there's just games where even when both teams were average, they were just, and you hated them. Allen really doesn't have that. Allen really does feel like the program that has no emotion. They're a robot. They're a machine. They just go out and win, and sometimes it almost feels like they do it detached from any joy or fun. I just threw a shot at Allen, didn't I? I didn't mean to, but...
You did. We're going to get the Balding Eagle Booster Club on here. But I would say, and we can get the... If you are listening to this Balding Eagle Booster Club, I would think they would agree of the teams that they consistently play, Plano East is their number one rival. How about that?
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't mean that in disbelieving. I was just saying, really?
Yeah.
I mean,
I would say they would, of the district teams, I would say they would say Plano East is their number one rival. And if it was a 10-0 versus, or 9-0 versus 9-0 at the end of the season and Plano East was good, Allen would just completely, that would be, they'd be up for it. Okay. That would be the one.
Okay. I mean, but do you see what I mean, though? I mean, really, when you look at Allen, it just, at times, it just feels like it's like, everything is so glossy. It's such a DFW team. It's so glossy. Everything, you know, the veneer is so shiny, but it's just like it's devoid of emotion. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they're so damn good. But it just feels devoid of emotion sometimes.
It does, because, you know, who's their real natural rival? You know, is it a Plano East? That's probably their closest school in proximity. You know, I would say the historians of Allen would say, you know, Allen versus McKinney before this kind of marriage with the Plano schools happened.
Yeah.
It was always Plano and Allen were never together. It was always Allen and McKinney and over to Louisville, and Plano was married with Richardson. And now that Richardson has kind of moved to be married with Dallas, you've seen this pile for the last 10 or 15 years. So, yeah, I think Allen does view their rivalries more regionally as opposed to specific in the locality. And I think it's an interesting point, because can you name another school like that in DFW? And I'd say no. I mean, everybody else has pretty much built-in rivalries. Allen is just kind of above the fray when it comes to that.
Yeah, and I think a lot – again, I think the main reason of that is because they leapfrog so quick. I mean, this was a team that – you know, that you know, Frisco was one of another one that grew, but it also spread, and it spread the school. So you didn't really see Frisco, the original Frisco High, go from 3A to the top class in a short period. Allen did, because they decided one school, one town, one school, one team, whatever you want to say it, and it just. They went 4A, 5A, boom, and then now they're a superpower in 6A. Even back when they first started, you remember when they first started, they were always the team that would go 10-0 and then get beat by somebody. You know, I mean, they had that run. They won state in 08, but that was – I remember the 2 years before that and a couple years after, they would be state ranked 10-0, and then something would happen. There was Rowlett the 1 year, and I can't remember who it was the other year. But I just don't think they ever got entrenched long enough to grow into a rivalry, and now they've become too big to grow into a rivalry. It'll take another Titan inside their district with many years of beating Allen before Allen goes, oh, crap, we can't beat them. Let's go, you know, we hate them now.
Yeah, and I don't think that they're going to get that anytime soon. I think Allen has built such a program that they are so many steps above that. I think that if you put Allen's second teamers in, they would win this district as well. I mean, that is how good and how much depth Allen has. So it just shocked me when so many people to start the year were the Allen is down this year. Allen is this. Allen is that. Allen is not ever going to be down. You know, even if they don't have the D1 talent, you know, they don't have the next, you know, Heisman Trophy winner as their quarterback or an NFL starters here and there, they're always going to be 1 through 22 better than just about anybody else in the district. And they're going to be 23 through 44 probably better than anybody else in the district. That is just how good they are. People come to the Metroplex and they go to Allen to play football. And that's not me saying that they're recruiting. They're recruiting themselves. If you want to move anywhere in DFW and you got a good kid, you're moving to Allen. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. And success breeds success. And Allen is just running away with it. And I don't see them being challenged in the district sense for another decade. I mean, it's going to have to take a monumental shift in high school football for that to change.
All right, we're going to stick with this. I know I said I was letting you pick games, but I think you brought – and we talked about this with Mount Vernon. We talked about that. Yeah, recruiting happens, but nowhere near the level that people think it does. And 15, 20 years ago, South Lake Carroll was exactly what Allen was. That's the school, if you moved to Dallas and you had the money, you moved to South Lake Carroll and you played football there. Well, that's how they got these players. Allen, what I think has the benefit of the fact is it doesn't take the money. Allen is so diversified as a city. I mean, you can live there and live in apartments and work at Walmart, and you can live there and be a high attorney or a doctor. And so you get a full talent base. So a kid moving in, his dad's he's a manager of a Walmart. Well, he can go live in Allen and afford it. South Lake Carroll still takes an economic level to really get into South Lake Carroll. And I think that's one of the reasons why Allen has an advantage over South Lake Carroll. And maybe, like I said, maybe they use that evil empire that we're so big, nobody else matters. They use that, I guess, as a positive. It just, on the outside looking in, it just looks plastic and fake at times.
You know, and we talk about even with Highland Park, you have to have an economic barrier
to entry Highland Park,
to
exactly.
get into Highland Park. Same thing there, but Lancaster, you could move in. You know, they have middle class areas, they have upper class areas, and they have areas where, you know, as long as you have a job, you can pretty much get.
And that's how Cedar Hill got to be big for when they had their run. Is the McMansion era of the late 90s sprouted up in athletes who maybe had gone to Carter, would have gone to Kimball, at some of the inner city. And Carter wasn't a true inner city, but Madison, Roosevelt, places where 15 years ago DISD teams were at least solid. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago Lincoln lost on a heartbreaker on a field goal, blocked field goal in Kilgore to overtime from getting a state championship. Carter, of course, in 88.
Sampled snake bite talk there.
Exactly. Exactly. That's called, you know, bringing the story around. But, I mean, you know, you had solid teams. Well, then Cedar Hill became an affordable destination for those parents and those athletes. And so, boom, Cedar Hill became an instant threat. And then it started to bleed over. And DeSoto was always solid. It started to bleed over into – then Allen became what they have. But the thing for Southlake and for Highland Park, they get to keep their status because of that economic line. So it helps them. But I think it helps Allen even more because they're just a welcome all. Anybody that wants to play here, you're more than welcome to play here.
Absolutely, and I think you're going to see that with Prosper as well, because Prosper has so much farmland and it's being developed. It might try to trend up that way, but there's still going to be affordable places to live in Prosper for a while, especially the further north as the expansion continues.
They split.
They are going to start splitting, and we're going to see 6 Prosper schools and 11 Frisco schools before you know it. I mean, it's going to be crazy.
And don't think that that's not done, that Frisco didn't partially do it, and Prosper didn't partially do it, because they go, we don't want to be as big as Allen because we're still not sure even if we're as big as Allen, we could beat Allen. I'm telling you,
Allen, absolutely.
Allen's shadow goes way further than just football. Allen's shadow goes into school planning and ISD planning. Because I have a lot of contacts inside Prosper, because for years, Prosper was a 3A town. They won state. We broadcast that state championship when they upset La Vega. And people literally legitimately told me, we split because we want to compete with Allen, but we don't want to compete with Allen.
Yeah. And all of this is a response to the Plano model. You know, the Plano model having these 3 mega schools back in the 80s when Plano was winning all the state championships. Allen did it better. And now that Allen's done it better, Frisco and Prosper, like, we don't want any part of that. We're going to do something different to where we're not having to compete with that. So you are correct about how Allen's model has completely changed the Collin County landscape. And it's going to be one where they've done it better. It's going to take time. It's going to take almost a magical expansion of a school or a team like Duncanville. You know, if Duncanville can, you talked about the dynasty year, if this can be the year that Duncanville can turn that into a dynasty, that model might start to become even better, where Duncanville is now the big team and Allen's looking at the end of the road against Duncanville and hoping that they're not in the same region. Right now they're an 8, Duncanville's an 8, Allen's a 9, but we've seen the Allen schools get pushed into District 8, and if they're looking at Duncanville in the second round of the playoffs, that could be a huge way to start detracting from Allen. But Allen would probably welcome that challenge because they're not scared of anybody right now.
Yeah, it seems like any time that Allen doesn't win in the playoffs, it always just seems flukish. Like, you know, again, there's no fear. It's very rare. I can't remember the last time that when I picked an Allen game that I actually truly gave thought for the other team to beat Allen to the point where I'm like, oh, yeah, Allen will lose that game. Even the ones they've lost, you don't really pick them. Oh, yeah, they're going to lose that game.
Well, last year against Duncanville was a perfect example of that. I think a lot of people took Duncanville. Mm-hmm. Duncanville got up on Allen 21-0, and then we're going to finally see Allen get bulldozed and get bullied around, and everybody's kind of excited about that. And what does Allen do? They have an epic second-half comeback and almost win that game because this is a team that they don't give up. And that's the kind of snake bite that Duncanville has to overcome. They got to put their foot on the opponents and keep them down. And I haven't seen Duncanville show that ability to do that, though. I have seen Allen not give up. I have seen Allen get down and crawl back into the game and just give it nonstop. They'll do crazy things, onside kicks, trick plays. They do that. And Duncanville, do they have that repertoire? Can they put it all out there if needed? I think Duncanville operates best as a front runner, whereas Allen has that kind of mentality. We expect to be there, and we will do whatever we can to maintain our spot. So So Duncanville, to me, has a lot of questions, but I love how you kind of highlighted it in the big picture. Will we be looking at, if Duncanville wins three of the four next state championships this year, as the start of a dynasty there? And Duncanville's been overdue for that. I mean, this is a team that bills itself as the city of champions, and in many sports they have been. You know, we can get back to Bob Alpert talk and Kevin Ozzie back when he was the AD there, and how Duncanville had built that, and then it kind of disappeared.
To finish this note on a circle, we were talking about Arlington Sam Houston and their state run back in, or state semifinal run back in 1990. The head coach was Kevin Ozzie's dad, Ken.
Can't beat that. And I have a mea culpa.
I love the layout there for a second.
Bringing it back to Arlington. I'm never going to ask you about things again. I was just giving you giving me a mental breather. Talk about North Crowley and Sam Houston, and you shoehorn it back in as we're getting to the final segments of our show. But I'm going to take Tyler Lee over Mesquite Horn.
Oh, I love how you worked that in. Yes, yes. Of course, now that I finally got you over to the East Texas side, Horn will probably win by two touchdowns. No, I like Tyler. I like Tyler Lee in that game. Just looking at the game, I think with Horn this year, and again, the circumstances last year, why they struggled early, were completely different to this year. But we all, and I did it too, for the first part of the season, you just go, they did that last year, though, and look what they ended up doing. There was a reason why last year. This year, the reason is they just simply not quite as talented. They're a lot younger. Horn next year is going to be scary, I think. But I think this year, it was a little too late when they started coming on.
Well, I actually think, I feel very vindicated in my thoughts that three or four weeks ago, Mesquite Horn had done that. But we talked about it with Frisco and Frisco ISD, the Frisco ISD show. Something happened to Frisco somewhere at some point in the second half against Reedy, where they've just been not the same team for the rest of the year. Something happened to Horn after the Mesquite game, to where they had a couple injuries, they lost a couple of, I don't know what it is, that specific element, but all of a sudden now, you know, where they had beaten Mesquite and it had been looking good, and I thought they'd be competitive against a team like Longview or competitive against Rockwall. They just weren't anymore. And then they lost the Rockwall Heat. They struggled against North Mesquite. Something happened there.
I think honestly, what happened is the losses just started to wear them down. I mean, you came into that Mesquite game and they'd only beaten John Tyler to begin the year. Now's a nice win. And you look at the schedule first off, and this, we've been having this talk on the 3A show about Atlanta. Atlanta and East Texas always plays top powers, and a lot of years that helps them. I think some years it grinds them down to where there's nothing left at the end of the season. And when you look at the schedule of playing Tyler John Tyler, Highland Park, Cedar Hill, Arlington, Rockwall, Longview, you just, and you're not even, except for maybe one or two games, you're not even close in those games. I think that just starts to wear you down.
I think you're accurate about that. And last year, I think it energized them. I think they got stronger because of that, you know, kind of iron sharpens iron. But this year, just the mentality of this team just didn't have it. And then now they have to go into Tyler. You know, we talked about distance with St. Angelo Central. They have to go into Tyler and win that game against a team that has had success and has had some wins and has had some disappointing losses. You look at Tyler Lee's four losses, and other than Longview and Rockwall, they've been in, you know, they should beat Mesquite. You know, when we look at that, they're up 14-3 and kind of had a fourth quarter collapse. I think Mesquite Horn can't go into Tyler and win that game. But you mentioned it, and it is time for the Diggs offshoot rant of the week. East Texas, we do this every week, whether it's Liberty, ILO, or whatever. What do you think about that hypothetical where you have a five-way tie at 4-2 in that Atlanta district? You talked about, you brought up Atlanta, and I saw that scenario where we could have a five-way tie in a team that wins district, has a share of district, doesn't even make the playoffs. How crazy is that?
Not only is it crazy, but it's going to probably happen. We talked about it on the 3A show, but you've got Hugh Springs is the team that will end up being out. And the sad thing is, there's nothing they can do about this week. They're off this week. You've got Atlanta playing Hooks. Hooks, who had been kind of the team that had stayed above everybody in all this confusion and all this craziness, they had stayed above everybody. And then last week, they get absolutely – or 2 weeks ago, they get absolutely throttled by Jefferson 49-7. And that opened the door for what we have. You have Atlanta, who then just beat Jefferson last week 28-24. They take on Hooks. So if they beat Hooks, Hugh Springs is already going to finish 4-2. Jefferson's going to beat Redwater, who's terrible this year. And Mount Vernon's going to beat New Boston, who is terrible this year. You're going to have that in Hugh Springs at 4-2, 8-2 on the season, in an era where everybody says we have too many playoff teams, they're going to be sitting at home. And a team that could go, they are, I'm telling you, Hugh Springs is stacked enough to where if they were the fourth place team, they could go four rounds deep in the playoffs. That's how good Hugh Springs is, and they just got the unfortunate that where they had one of their better teams since the mid-2000s when they won 12 games and 11 games in back-to-back years. They've had their best team since then. It just happened to be in the toughest district they've probably been in 30 years.
And people ask me why they always bring up this East Texas stuff. It's the DFW show. Hearing that, I think it's important for DFW people to hear that, because these are the same people who are criticizing we have too many teams in the playoffs. Yep. These are the same people who are saying, you know, Fort Worth Northside makes the playoffs. This is dumb. Why are we having so many teams? And I've seen it on Twitter this week. I think one of the best stories this year is Fort Worth Northside finally breaking that 40-year streak and making the playoffs as a program-defining win and turning a program around. It is important to understand there is so much parity in other parts of the state that you need to have four teams make the playoffs. Like, you know, that district that's only a five-team district with La Vega and Brownwood and Stephenville and China Spring. I mean, all four of those teams are state championship pedigree teams. Maybe not this year, but they all have that kind of a pedigree. As we are moving the classifications out and you have a lot of five-team districts, you're going to have five-team districts that are good, and you're going to have teams that are 1-9 make the playoffs. We could have had Liberty Ilo make the playoffs at 1-9 if they were able to beat Pittsburgh, but you have some really good programs as well, and you're going to be seeing those teams in the playoffs. You're looking at them at 2-8 and not being good. They're going to come up and get you in 4A, especially in East Texas. It's important to understand that there is so much good football being played around the state. Keep an eye on East Texas. Keep an eye on some of the North Central West Texas teams, the Lubbock Coopers and teams like that, because there is good football being played outside the DFW area, and you have to know what's going on there if you want to cheer on your DFW teams to victory.
Well, and keep an eye on them, because let's all be honest. By the time you and I are probably hanging up our shoes, and hopefully we live long enough to go another 20 years of just talking football and maybe even 30 years of talking football, DFW area is just getting bigger and bigger to where eventually we're talking Atlanta on the D. Me and Chris, the site owner daily, we joked about eventually our regional show is just going to be called the DFW show.
And it is moving north. I mean, Texoma to me is we got to quit this whole Texoma stuff. Sherman and Denison is DFW. I mean, that just what are you going to draw the line? And Howell? I mean, come on. I mean, what's the Texoma differentiation? And it's moving east as well. I mean, you're seeing Roy City kind of being they call themselves the gateway to East Texas. And it's going to not be long before that area from Roy City to Greenville is built up, then over to Sulphur Springs, and it's just going to continue. And the 175 corridor, I mean, you're even seeing Malakoff play against DFW teams, against Dallas Life Oak Cliff. And I think that 175 corridor is another area that's really growing. Where are you going to draw that line at what's East Texas and what's DFW? I mean, a lot of people think Malakoff is East Texas, but when I'm driving down 175, I'm seeing, you know, you see Kaufman, you see Gun Barrel City and that area, Eustace. Where is the differentiation between East Texas? And I agree. And it's important to understand that there's really good football being played out there. And you're going to see a team, and you just mentioned how that scenario happens, 8-2, a regional finalist, maybe a top 10 team if you're looking at the statistics and the power polls, not even make the playoffs.
Hey, did you know that Lone Star Gridiron does mini helmets? Yeah, custom-designed mini helmets that match your school. When quality and attention to detail are important, choose authentic Lone Star Gridiron mini helmets. Our library currently has hundreds of different Texas high school football teams. If you don't see your helmet, reach out to us about creating one. And hey, they make the coolest fundraisers for your booster clubs. Go to LoneStarGridiron.com and look for mini helmets on the top menu bar.
And that was Matt Diggs. You can find him on Twitter, at Professor Diggs. Has one of the best at the end of Friday night's tweets that you'll ever see. It's called The Dump, where he just basically goes through all the DFW area teams and talks about his thoughts after that week's actions. You can also find him on the Fifth Quarter podcast. And we appreciate him being here with us all year long. And he'll continue to be with us through the playoffs. I want to remind everybody, if you'd like to email Matt and I, and we do have a question. Sorry, Coach, could not get that in this week. You saw where the show went. I will answer Matt, because I think Matt wants to answer that question anyway. We will talk about that question, and I don't want to give it away, but it's a really good question, and it really does fit kind of everything that's become the theme of what Matt and I have talked about this year with recruitment and ISDs and how ISDs can be good again and things like that. This is a really good question. So, Coach, I promise you we'll get that in next week. But, yeah, you can email Terry at LoneStarGridIron.com, or you can call our fan feedback line. That's 713-568-6361. Don't worry. You don't have to talk to anybody. It's a voicemail system. All you do is say, this is my name, this is the question, and this is for the DFW show, and we'll play it right here on the air. Want to, again, thank our title sponsor, TopShelfSalsa.com. Check them out online. Top Shelf Salsa. Also want to thank MHA Oil and Gas, Heroes Heating and Air, and Eddie Washington Realty, DFW Executive Realty.com. Well, that's week 11. You know what that means? The playoffs? We're going to talk about that next week right here on the Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex Huddle on the LSG Sports Network.